Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. If you've been following the global conversation around energy, and specifically that really sticky problem of renewable energy storage, then, you know, the name AES Corporation is just impossible to ignore.
It really is.
So today we are strapping in for a major look at an American utility and power generation giant that has kind of quietly become this crucial driver of the energy transition.
It's a really compelling case study. I mean, most people probably only know them by their local utility names, right? But this is a Fortune 500 company that's operating on a global chessboard.
Exactly.
They're actively rewriting the blueprint for how major power companies transition from a coal and gas legacy to a future that's defined by solar, wind, and especially massive grid-scale battery storage.
That's the key. And our mission in this deep dive is pretty comprehensive. We are going to synthesize the company's tumultuous history, its immense financial muscle, its truly global asset footprint, and critically, the cutting-edge technology platforms that define where AES is headed right now. So for you, this isn't just about a corporate structure. It's about identifying the industrial players who are putting billions of dollars on the line to solve the problem of intermittency, who is steering the ship through these turbulent waters of innovation. That's what we need to figure out.
Okay, so let's unpack this. A good place to start is just the sheer scale and scope of AES.
Let's do it.
We're talking about a powerhouse headquartered in Arlington, Virginia. It's a key player in the U.S. for sure, but its influence is it's dispersed all across the world.
And the numbers are huge. I mean, based on 2023 figures, we're seeing a company that generated U.S. $12.7 billion in revenue.
Which is a big number on its own.
It is. But you have to look closer at their assets. Their total assets have just ballooned to U.S. $44.8 billion. That financial scale is what lets them undertake these massive decade-long infrastructure projects around the globe.
And that financial muscle is supported by, approximately 9,600 employees worldwide?
Yep.
Operating in 15 different countries. They're traded on the New York Stock Exchange. They're a component of the S&P 500, which, you know, that instantly tells you this is a blue chip utility stock. It's foundational to the U.S. economy and the investment world.
Okay, so here is a surprising fact. And I think it's the perfect tone setter for this discussion because it moves us beyond those, you know, immense financials.
Okay.
We tend to think of utilities as slow, right? Infrastructure heavy, resistant to change.
Stereotype, yeah.
But AES is deliberately positioning itself otherwise. In 2022, they actually ranked in the top 10 of Fast Company's best workplaces for innovators.
And that recognition is highly strategic. It's not just a nice plaque for the wall.
Right.
It signals to investors and to the market that innovation isn't just a compliance issue or some side project for AES. It is a core, celebrated, and funded strategic pillar.
That's a great way to put it.
And this is absolutely essential because you have to remember, they still have to manage these enormous legacy conventional power plants all over the world.
Right, the coal and gas plants.
Exactly. While at the same time, they're building the entirely new infrastructure of the future. The only way you can bridge that gap is through intense technological advancement.
So if they're going to survive the next 2 decades, they have to run the old world efficiently while pioneering the new world. It's a very difficult tightrope walk.
It's a very difficult rack, yeah.
Okay, so to truly understand how AES ended up as this pioneer in storage, we really need to go back to the beginning. Part one is all about their history, the almost radical corporate culture they built, and then the eventual necessary strategic pivot they had to make after a major industry shock.
The founding philosophy is genuinely unique. I mean, particularly for a company that's rooted in the, you know, the traditional energy sector.
It really is.
The company was founded as Applied Energy Services, AES, on January 28, 1981, by two men, Roger Sand and Dennis Bake. And the context of their background is very revealing. Both of them had been high-level appointees to the Federal Energy Administration under President Richard Nixon.
So they're coming from a very specific background. They brought this perspective rooted in high-level government policy and planning. And they initially founded AES as a consulting firm, right? Focused on energy solutions.
That's right. Before the company went public in 1991, Sant served as the initial chairman and CEO, and then Bake stepped up as CEO in 1994.
So what's so fascinating and what really defined their early trajectory was this corporate culture.
It's incredible. Bake and Sant deeply instilled a system of radical decentralized management. They called it putting the workplace in the hands of the workers.
I mean, just imagine that. An energy company where ordinary employees were delegated significant financial and operational responsibility.
Yeah, often running these massive plants semi-autonomously. It's unheard of.
It sounds almost like a philosophy experiment run inside a major corporation. And crucially, their mandate was explicitly idealistic.
Very much so.
They emphasized social responsibility, community engagement, and environmental stewardship, often placing these metrics above strict, immediate quarterly profit goals. It was a very unusual, maybe even utopian model for an energy company at the time.
And that idealistic philosophy, coupled with that decentralized structure, it created this engine for massive, almost reckless, early global expansion.
Right. This was the golden age of independent power producers, the IPPs.
Exactly. Bake and Sant oversaw the construction and acquisition of power plants in a mind-boggling 29 countries. They grew their staff from, what, 1,400 employees to an astonishing 32,000 employees in this rapid global rush.
That's just an incredible rate of growth. And that rapid aggressive growth strategy was premised on this idea that local teams, you know, empowered by this decentralized model, could navigate complex international markets better than a central HQ could.
Right.
But such a dispersed, idealistic model, it just came with inherent financial risk. And eventually that risk crystallized.
It did. The global expansion, while it was impressive, was highly leveraged. The rapid, anti-corporate, socially focused model hit a massive brick wall in the early 2000s. And that brings us to the crisis and consolidation phase.
The year 2002 was just catastrophic for the energy sector, wasn't it?
It was a disaster, largely because of the spectacular collapse of Enron.
Of course.
And AES, because of its size and its leveraged global portfolio, suffered immensely. The company faced a severe liquidity crisis that year, which led directly to the resignation of the CEO, Dennis Bake.
So the Enron fallout just sent these shockwaves to the entire industry.
Oh, yeah. It dried up credit markets. It plunged energy firms into distrust. For AES, which had borrowed heavily to finance its global portfolio, this was a near fatal blow.
So Roger Sant, the other founder, he stayed on as executive chairman until 2003, just trying to stabilize the ship.
He did. And then Paul Hanrahan stepped in as president and CEO. Hanrahan stayed for a decade, until 2012. And his primary role was really just triage and stabilization.
The cleanup guy.
Pretty much. He was the one who had to manage the debt fallout, divest non-core assets, and make sure the company regained its footing in investor trust after such a, you know, a dramatic period of trauma and instability.
So Hanrahan's era was really about surviving that immediate threat.
Right. But the real strategic evolution,
yeah,
that began when Andrés Gluski succeeded him in 2012. Gluski initiated the next, and I would argue most important, strategic shift in AES's history. Disciplined consolidation and intense focus.
It's such a clear pivot. If the founder's strategy was this radical global expansion into 29 countries,
Gluski's strategy was the complete opposite. It was radical retreat and focus. He implemented a decisive strategy that dramatically reduced the number of countries AES operated in, shrinking that footprint from 28 down to 16.
Just cutting them loose.
The goal was surgically clear. Consolidate operations around core markets, reduce the administrative costs that came with managing dozens of fragmented regulatory environments, and free up capital. This was a definitive strategic departure from the founder's initial vision.
It's interesting, though, because while consolidation is often seen as strictly a financial move, Gluski married it to a crucial modern mandate, decarbonization.
Yes, that's the key.
He put in place a formal program that was dedicated to reducing the company's total carbon emission intensity, and he coupled that with a firm commitment to providing renewable forms of energy, particularly focusing on solar and wind-based storage systems.
And this is the monumental pivot point for the company. AES went from being this massive, sprawling global plant builder, often of coal and gas,
right,
to a consolidated company whose explicit public goal is managing its existing carbon footprint down while aggressively driving the transition to storage and renewables.
So the decentralized idealism of the 90s has sort of morphed into the centralized technological focus of the 2020s.
Perfectly said.
So before we jump into that technology, let's just briefly look at how that focus manifested domestically through some major rebranding and acquisitions in North America.
Sure. It's all about unity and brand clarity now. Back in 2000, AES acquired Indianapolis Power and Light, or IPALCO.
A well-known utility.
A very prominent one, historically. But in February 2021, it was formally rebranded as AES Indiana.
And we saw the exact same structure with DPL Inc., which was formerly Dayton Power and Light. AES acquired them in 2011.
And that rebranded publicly as AES Ohio, also in February 2021.
So they timed it together.
They did. And this is a nuance worth noting. While the public face is now unified under the AES brand to reinforce that global clean energy identity, the source materials show they often retain the former names, like DPL Inc., for legal or regulatory purposes.
Right, but the standardization of the brand, that signals that AES is speaking with a unified voice to the market about its carbon reduction mandate and its future strategy.
Exactly. It's the visual representation of the Gluski consolidation. Same assets, but a new focused public identity.
Okay, now we get to the future, and this is where the real investment dollars are flowing. I think the biggest indicator of AES's commitment to solving the intermittency problem of renewables isn't just in their balance sheet. It's in their technological joint venture called Fluence.
Fluence is the linchpin. I mean, if you want to understand AES's strategic move in the 21st century, you have to understand Fluence.
So when did it launch?
It launched in January 2018 as a 50-50 joint venture between AES Energy Storage and the German industrial giant Siemens.
And this wasn't just, you know, a simple handshake agreement. This was the calculated birth of an energy storage powerhouse designed to operate at the industrial level.
It was. And the strategic rationale is just brilliant because it connected two very distinct yet very necessary strengths.
Okay, what were they?
So AES brought its decades of extensive practical research and experience in lithium-ion energy sources. They'd been an early adopter of large-scale battery systems, and they had all this grid integration know-how.
And Siemens brought, well, Siemens.
Siemens brought its absolutely vast global sales, distribution, and manufacturing presence in the industrial and energy sectors. They provide the global machine necessary to commercialize AES's R&D on a scale that AES alone probably could not have achieved.
So the goal was simple but audacious.
Corner the rapidly rising global demand for utility-scale clean energy technologies.
And they hit the ground running. Headquartered in Washington, D.C., chaired by former AES VP Stephen Coughlin, Fluence was immediately deployed in 16 countries.
Right, signaling its intent to dominate the industrial storage market from day one.
Okay, let's dive deep into the technology itself. This is critical because they aren't offering just a generic battery. They have three distinct named platforms aimed at solving different parts of the energy storage and delivery puzzle.
And this is so important. Intermittency is the fundamental economic hurdle for solar and wind, right?
Right. The sun goes down, the wind stops blowing.
Exactly. The grid needs reliable backup, and gas or coal used to fill that gap. Fluence's three platforms are designed to make batteries the reliable and, critically, the economically viable alternative.
So the first pillar is Advantium. We've heard the name, but what is its specific function and its design advantage?
Advantium is, I think, conceptually the most accessible. It is defined as a storage system built from several small modular nodes.
Yeah.
Think of them like high-capacity Lego blocks for the grid, all powered by lithium-ion batteries.
And that modularity means it can be scaled up or down quickly for different site requirements, right? From like 10 milliW to 400 milliW.
Precisely. But the core feature that the sources repeatedly highlight is its ability to offer heightened consistency and performance.
Okay, consistency. So what does that mean in practice?
Consistency means Advantium is designed to react instantly and maintain stable output. That makes it essential for fundamental grid stabilization services, which are financially lucrative and absolutely critical to maintaining power quality.
So if the grid frequency dips or surges even a little bit?
Advantium units are designed to instantly respond to keep things steady. It's about that split-second reaction time.
Okay, so that addresses the need for steady, reliable, fast-response power injection. The second technology is Systridge. This name immediately tips its cap to the Siemens side of the partnership.
It does. Cyasturge is defined as an electrical energy storage system fueled predominantly by wind and solar energy. So while Advantian focuses on modularity and consistency, Cyasturge focuses on advanced controls and dependability in integrating those renewable sources.
It relies heavily on some advanced concepts. The sources mention jargon like closed loop controls and pulse modulation built into its semiconductors. For listeners, that sounds highly technical. What does closed loop control actually mean in practice?
Think of it like this. A conventional system might react slowly, waiting for a major frequency drop before it kicks in. A closed loop control system is the brain that constantly monitors every variable on the grid, the flow, the frequency, the voltage, and instantly adjusts the energy input from the battery, eliminating any delays.
So it's constantly self-correcting.
It's essentially a system that monitors its own output and the grid's needs in real time and fine-tunes itself constantly.
So Advantian is the consistent, scalable hardware, and Cyasturge is the highly dependable real-time software and control system for integrating large, intermittent renewable assets like wind farms.
Exactly. It ensures the power harvested from renewables is usable and reliable when you need it. Which brings us to the third pillar, the one focused explicitly on optimizing solar, SunFlex Energy, or as it's often called, SunFlex.
And SunFlex was developed with a specific market-driven purpose, right? Expanding the utility and economic possibilities of photovoltaic solar energy.
We all know the problem here. Peak solar production happens midday, but peak demand is often in the early evening.
Right, when everyone gets home and turns on their appliances, the famous duck curve.
Exactly. If you don't store that midday energy, you essentially lose it, or you force grid operators to shut down solar during times of oversupply, which is incredibly inefficient.
And that's where SunFlex comes in.
Precisely. SunFlex is specifically built to capture and store energy during those peak solar production hours in order to time shift the energy for later delivery.
So it's the essential link between a solar farm and 247 grid needs.
It is. By effectively shifting energy from noon to 7 p.m., AES significantly increases the economic viability and the usefulness of every single solar panel they install.
Okay, that gives us the technological differentiation. Fluence is clearly the engine. So let's look at some illustrative projects that showcase just how large the scale of these deployments is and what they mean for the market.
Our flagship example in the U.S. is just a massive endorsement of their technology. Fluence is handling the largest projected venture in its portfolio, a colossal 400 milliwatt power center energy storage project for Southern California Edison, SCE.
A 400 milliwatt system is not just utility scale. That's a small power plant in itself, running entirely on batteries.
It is. And this system is strategically housed within AES's own power center in Los Alamitos, California. The fact that one of the largest utilities in California, a state with incredibly aggressive renewable mandates, chose Fluence to anchor its long-term battery storage needs.
That says a lot.
It shows that AES is not just an innovator, but a trusted institutional partner in this energy transition. This deployment helps manage peak demand in a very high-density area.
So moving to Europe, Fluence has installed 6 storage projects across Germany, and their specific purpose is telling. They're intended to provide critical grid stabilization services.
And that speaks directly to the consistency promise of Advantian and the control sophistication of Cyasturge.
Right.
Germany has a highly integrated, very complex grid with massive amounts of intermittent wind and solar. So integrating 6 dedicated storage systems specifically to stabilize that grid showcases Fluence's technology as a reliability tool, not just as a source of power.
Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform, trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Power. It's ensuring power quality across a major European economy.
And then we have the microgrid test case, which is a perfect real-world example of energy transition in action, not just theory on paper.
You're talking about the hybrid microgrid on the tiny Mediterranean island of Ventotene.
Exactly.
This is fascinating because island grids are usually completely reliant on expensive, dirty diesel generation. So the Ventotene project, which was developed through an agreement with the Italian utility Enel, combines traditional diesel generators with renewables and storage.
And the core objective there is what?
To reduce the island's carbon costs and its emissions by strategically integrating storage and renewables into a traditionally fossil fuel-dependent, isolated system. It's a literal blueprint for transitioning small, isolated, and environmentally sensitive grids globally.
So if it works on Ventotene,
the model can be exported to hundreds of other islands worldwide.
And finally, showcasing their global reach in Asia, AES India, in partnership with Mitsubishi, commenced construction on a 10 milliW energy storage solution in Rohini back in 2018.
And crucially, this system operates off Fluence's Advansion technology, that modular consistency platform. It was projected to be the first utility-scale energy storage system in India, a massive emerging market with enormous energy demand.
Which confirms that the Advansion system is being used for these initial grid-scale deployments in key emerging economies. It's becoming a critical piece of global energy infrastructure development.
It is.
We've established the historical pivot and the advanced technology platform of Fluence. Now we need to discuss how AES is achieving the sheer scale required to meet its decarbonization mandate. And that means talking about the acquisition and strategic role of Spower.
Right. Spower is the engine for their U.S. utility-scale renewable generation. AES acquired Spower in a joint purchase in 2018 alongside Alberta Investment Management Corporation. This was a critical move for them to quickly gain ground in the solar development space.
And their role is indispensable. I mean, Spower is identified as one of the largest developers of utility-scale solar in the United States.
It is.
So this acquisition immediately cemented AES's position as a major player in clean generation development. It saved them years of organic growth and regulatory approval processes. They basically bought a leadership position.
They did. And their geographic focus is highly strategic. Spower operates across 11 U.S. states, but they have a particular concentration on the western U.S. and states with really aggressive renewable energy mandates.
So California and North Carolina specifically.
Exactly. Their assets are perfectly positioned for high-growth, mandated clean energy markets.
Let's talk numbers on Spower, because this is where the commitment truly registers. Their current operating portfolio includes 1.3 GW, that's gigawatts worth of solar and wind-based properties that are online and generating revenue.
And that's a lot. But the real story is in the future pipeline.
The pipeline is immense.
It is. They have over 10,000 milliW, that's 10 GW worth of projects currently in the developmental stage.
Can you put that 10 GW into perspective for us?
Sure. 10 gigawatts is roughly the power generation of 10 large, modern nuclear reactors. But this is all being delivered through solar and wind.
So that 10,000 milliW development pipeline is the clearest indicator of where AES believes the market is going and where their capital is being focused. How does that size up against typical utility commitments in the U.S.?
It's a gargantuan commitment. I mean, for a utility company, a 10 GW pipeline is aggressive and transformative. It signals a shift from just incremental growth to exponential scaling.
So it puts AES and Spower among the fastest growing renewable developers.
Absolutely. And it guarantees that AES will be a major participant in meeting national and state level clean energy goals for the next decade. They are betting billions on volume.
Okay, moving from massive solar farms to operational efficiency, we need to talk about how AES is leveraging cutting-edge operational tools, specifically drone technology, across its sprawling assets.
This is a great example of technology improving an old and, frankly, dangerous industry. AES announced a partnership with the Drone Provider Measure, and the stated reason was a deliberate effort to protect their employees from industry hazards and improve overall workplace safety.
And while safety is obviously paramount, what's the operational efficiency gain here?
Oh, efficiency gains are enormous. Think about the sheer volume of assets AES owns globally. Thousands of miles of transmission lines, towering wind turbines, massive solar installations.
It's a lot to inspect.
A ton. Traditionally, inspecting one wind turbine might require two or three certified technicians, heavy equipment, and a full day of work. Using advanced thermal and visual drones, a single pilot can map an entire wind farm or a massive solar array in an afternoon.
So it drastically cuts operational time and cost, while at the same time, it's providing more detailed data-driven diagnostics.
Exactly. The drones inspect their various infrastructure sites across 17 countries, allowing them to spot potential problems, like a small crack in a turbine blade or a hot spot on a solar panel, long before they become catastrophic failures.
So it's predictive maintenance.
It's predictive maintenance driven by drone data. And that significantly reduces OPEX, the operational expenditure, which flows directly to the bottom line. It's technology applied to maximize both safety and profit.
Finally, let's bring this back to the core theme, how AES uses its new storage technology Fluence's Advansion to integrate with its existing older revenue-generating assets. This is really where the whole strategy comes together.
It is. This integration is the practical, lived definition of energy transition. AES Energy Storage, even before the formal Fluence joint venture, was already a pioneer. They were responsible for some of the largest battery storage power stations in the world. A major example being the 40 milliW lithium-ion battery facility they developed for San Diego Gas and Electric.
But the perfect case study for this integration, the one that shows the link between their old global footprint and their new technology, is in the United Kingdom. We're talking about the Array Energy Storage System at the Kilroot Power Station.
Yes, AES acquired Kilroot way back in 1992, making it a classic legacy asset. It runs on conventional oil, gas, and turbines, a major conventional power source for the region.
And the strategic genius here is what they did next. They didn't replace the plant.
They augmented it. At that very same decades-old site, they deployed a 10 milliW system operating off Fluence's Advansion technology.
And this array system is noted as the largest advanced energy storage system in the entire United Kingdom.
It is. And this demonstrates the core Gloski strategy perfectly. Maintain the legacy conventional capacity to generate essential revenue, but immediately use the strategically valuable site to host cutting-edge battery storage.
So the battery then acts as an instantaneous shock absorber for the modern grid, making the whole system more resilient.
It's the ultimate mixed portfolio, old capacity, generating cash flow, new technology preparing the market for the future. It's a transition company, physically manifested on one piece of land.
We've covered the history and the innovation. Now let's quickly walk through the enormous, complex global footprint that AES still maintains. This will show just how diverse their asset base remains, despite that consolidation strategy under Gluski. The focus may have narrowed, but the reach is still staggering.
Absolutely. The Gluski consolidation was about optimizing their portfolio, not eliminating global operations entirely. So beyond the renamed utilities like AES Indiana and AES Ohio, their North American operations include AES Puerto Rico, which has faced its own unique set of challenges, and the AES Colon Power Station in Panama, which is a state-of-the-art liquefied natural gas, or LNG, facility. And of course, AES Energy Storage remains a key global subsidiary, now largely channeled through Fluence.
And moving south, the South American depth is particularly illustrative of their early aggressive expansion phase in the 90s and early 2000s. They acquired a lot of properties in Argentina during that period.
Yes, and the Argentinian examples really highlight their calculated asset diversity. They needed reliability and scale.
Yeah.
So you have Termondes in Salta, a 643 milliW hybrid plant using gasoline and diesel.
Which is crucial for providing that quick start backup power to stabilize the grid during peak.
Exactly. Then there's Guillermo Brown, a 576 milliW gas turbine using natural gas and diesel, which they acquired more recently in 2016.
But for me, the most significant historical detail is the acquisition of Alicora. This is a hydropowered plant acquired back in 2000 that boasts a massive 1,000 milliW of generation capacity.
And that 1 GW hydro plant acquisition complicates the clean energy narrative, doesn't it?
It does.
It underscores that even in that early phase of global expansion, well before the formal pivot to renewables, AES recognized and pursued high-capacity, clean-generating assets like hydropower. It wasn't purely a fossil fuel play. It shows a long-standing strategic value placed on stable, non-thermal generation where it was available.
We also see these highly integrated partnership structures, like in Brazil. AES Brazil, founded in 1997, is structurally unique. Its ownership is divided between AES and the Brazilian Development Bank.
And that partnership structure highlights the deep political and financial integration you often need to operate utility-scale assets in major emerging economies. Partnering with a national development bank mitigates political risk and provides local financing expertise. It's essential for massive infrastructure projects like the ones they run there.
Let's pivot to Europe, which presents an absolute study in contrast, especially in the East, where the juxtaposition of old and new energy is just so stark.
Bulgaria is the textbook example of this internal corporate tension. On one hand, you have Maritsa Istok, acquired in 2011. It's a massive 690 millijoule coal plant.
Identified as the largest energy complex in Southeast Europe. Absolutely critical for regional stability, but also a major emitter.
A huge emitter. And yet, right alongside that massive traditional coal operation, they run St. Nicola, a 156 milliW wind generator built in 2009.
And St. Nicola isn't just any wind farm.
No, it's noted as the largest wind farm in the country and was specifically awarded for high efficiency and sustainability. It received both the Sustainable Energy Deal of the Year prize and Investor of 2009 in the energy sector.
So that contrast captures the complexity of AES's operational reality.
It does. They're running some of the largest conventional power complexes in a region while simultaneously owning the benchmark for sustainable, renewable energy generation there. It's running two entirely different businesses under one corporate umbrella.
In the United Kingdom, the conventional assets are substantial. The Ballyhamford Power Station, the largest power station on the Irish mainland at 1017 milliW, and the aforementioned Kilroot Power Station at 560 milliW.
Which, as we said, is the host site for that cutting-edge array storage system.
Right. And tying this back to the storage theme, improving the technology in sophisticated markets, AES established Netherlands ES in Wissingen. This is a dedicated, standalone 10 milliW Advantian energy storage system.
And the strategic point of a dedicated 10 milliW storage system in the Netherlands is really interesting.
What is it?
It was specifically designed as a low battery alternative to traditional peaking power plants and large hydroelectric storages. In a dense European grid, it provides fast frequency response and grid services without the need for massive thermal capacity. It's demonstrating the economic efficiency and technical capability of Advantian in a highly competitive and regulated environment.
Okay, finally, let's look at Asia, where capacity requirements often demand enormous infrastructure and unique financing models because of the rapid growth of energy demand.
Asia is where AES demonstrates its ability to handle just monumental projects. In Vietnam, they constructed the 12,240 milliW Mung Duong II coal-fired plant, which became commercially operational in 2015. That is a staggering capacity figure.
And it was constructed under a specific financing model, a build-operate-transfer, or BOT, agreement. Can you explain why that structure is so crucial for private energy projects in places like Vietnam?
Certainly. A BOT agreement means that AES, the private developer, builds and operates the massive facility, in this case, for a set period, say 20 or 25 years. Crucially, at the end of that period, ownership and operation of the plant transfers completely to the Vietnamese government.
So it mitigates the financial risk for the host country.
Exactly. While providing a guaranteed return for AES over the term, it allows the private sector to bring necessary capital and expertise to massive public infrastructure projects while ensuring the host country eventually gains full control. It was, notably, the largest power project in the nation's private sector.
The Philippines gives us another perfect contrast. Similar to the UK and Bulgaria examples, they run the Masinloc Power Plant, a 630 milliW coal plant, a foundational asset.
But again, right there, they have Masinloc ES, a 10 milliW storage generator, launched in 2016. That storage unit was the first battery-based energy system in the entire country,
providing crucial power stability to the Luzon grid. It's that exact same strategic model.
Leverage a massive conventional site as the anchor for pioneering storage technology in a high-demand emerging market.
And we can't forget Central Asia, where their legacy goes back to the mid-90s, showcasing how long they've been involved in global asset management.
That's right. In Kazakhstan, they acquired substantial assets in 1997, including the 1,372 milliW coal plant Uzkomenogorsk and the formerly owned Uzkomenogorsk HPP, which was a 340 milliW hydro plant.
And in India, their legacy is also deep. The long-standing OPGC plant, a 420 milliW coal plant acquired in 1998.
And the future commitment there is massive, too. You have the expansion, OPGCT, which is expected to boast 1,300 milliW of capacity and is currently under construction.
So this highlights a necessary corporate reality, doesn't it? While they are pivoting hard to renewables in the U.S. and Europe, managing and expanding conventional assets is still a vital, revenue-generating element of their business in developing nations, where energy security and baseline power are the immediate priorities.
It's the tightrope walk we talked about at the beginning.
Okay, let's unpack this and bring it all together. What stands out to you as the core unifying trajectory of the AES Corporation?
The core trajectory is one of intense philosophical and practical evolution driven by market necessity. I mean, they began as this innovative, highly decentralized consulting firm led by former government appointees.
Right, prioritizing ideals and rapid global spread.
Exactly. Then they survived a catastrophic industry crisis in the early 2000s, and finally, they evolved into their current identity, a highly consolidated global utility focused intensely and profitably on leading the energy storage revolution.
It's the paradox of scale that makes them so relevant today. AES is not a clean energy startup. It is a complex industrial behemoth. Mm-hmm. They simultaneously manage massive, decades-old, 1,200 milliW coal plants in Vietnam and Bulgaria, which are essential for regional stability and for revenue generation, while deploying cutting-edge 400 milliwetter lithium-ion modular systems, the Advantian units developed through Fluence that stabilize the grids in countries like the U.S., Germany, and the Netherlands. They are a literal bridge company in the truest sense of the word.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Understanding the global energy transition means tracking companies like AES. They aren't waiting for the transition to happen. They are paying for it and deploying it.
Their joint venture Fluence, which is building that flagship 400 milliwetter storage in California, and their massive development engine, Spower, which controls a 10 GW pipeline.
They are defining how rapidly solar and wind power can be integrated into the existing infrastructure, using storage to manage that intermittency.
They took a decade of necessary stabilization after the crisis and turned it into a decade of focused strategic deployment. They recognize that storage is the linchpin. They're moving away from merely generating power and moving towards delivering flexible, digitally managed power,
which is the high-value commodity of the 21st century grid.
Exactly.
And this raises an important final question that connects back to the beginning of our deep dive. Consider the initial company philosophy established by Sant and Beck, which prioritized social responsibility and radical decentralization, leading them to build plants in nearly 30 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Then consider the current Gliske strategy. Consolidation, centralization, and an intense focus on high-tech solutions like Fluence and drone inspections. Did they sacrifice the idealism of that early global spread for the practical necessity of technological focus and financial discipline?
It's a great question. How does the current consolidated, highly efficient model reflect or diverge from that original mandate of decentralized, socially responsible energy production?
Did they achieve responsible energy production through a fundamentally different, more focused path than their founders ever envisioned?
That's something for you to mull over as you see where their next US $44 billion in assets goes. That concludes our deep dive into the past, present, and charged future of the AES Corporation. We'll see you next time.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.